With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mr. Vaccaro joins us first. Always a pleasure. Mike, thanks for all the kind words and the nice note you sent when things didn't go my way there in March. I appreciate that. And it's nice to be back, and it's always nice to read your stuff. And I really enjoyed today because it brought back memories for me. We'll get to that in a minute. How you doing? How's your family?
I'm doing well, Chris, and we're doing fine. And, man, it's really good to talk to you. It's good to have you back. And I know I don't speak for minority people. I know a lot of people feel the same way. So it's really good to hear your voice gracing our airwaves again.
I appreciate that. Hey, you wrote today on the first movie that I remember making me cry. I mean, I really literally remember crying at a young age over Brian's song and the great job done by Billy Dee Williams and James Caan. And I didn't know the story until you wrote about it. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just one of those stories that, you know, it's a movie, but you knew at the time when you were watching it, it was real. And then it just brought the players to such life. It was so, I don't know. I mean, there was just such depth in the movie that I recall that it was, you know, I think it is a really underrated sports movie. What are your thoughts and memories about it?
It really is, because, you know, a lot of major TV movies, especially from that era, weren't exactly what you would call cinematic gems.
Yeah, they were schlock. schlock is the right word.
There was a lot of schlock, and my gosh, they could have really turned that one into schlock if they weren't careful. And yet, you know what? I mean, you know, I watched it again. I avoided the temptation to watch it today after what I wrote, just because I've gotten so much of a response to it that was enough for me just to realize that I'd made a lot of people's, you know, giving them 5 minutes of happiness.
I'm glad, you know, I'm glad. I think, by the way, let me just interrupt for a second. People out there, it's important to do that, okay? What we do, and Mike much more successfully than I do, but what we do when we strike a nerve and we hit the target we're trying to hit, if you want Mike to do more of that, or Larry or anybody else that you read, you need to send them that quick note and let them know that was really cool. Thanks for writing that. And that's all you have to do. You don't have to, you know, give details on where you were and what you did and, you know, it affected my life this way. But Mike, wouldn't you agree that it's always nice to hear from your viewers, listeners, readers, that, you know, they appreciated the fact that you chose that topic and wrote about it well? That's mm-hmm. all. It's an important thing. If you want more of that, you gotta feed the fire a little bit. And I'm glad to hear that you got a lot of good feedback.
And you know what? It's really been amazing during this these 2 months. Look, I would certainly rather be covering games. I would certainly rather have games to cover anyway. I'm sure that you would rather have games to talk about. I mean, but I will say this, that the nature of the way that that the newspaper business is right now, I mean, what it's allowed me the last 2 months is to spend a lot of time telling stories that I normally wouldn't have had an opportunity to do. So I've done a bunch of columns like this, which I enjoy doing, but just in the normal course of doing business. I mean, you're at the ballpark 3 times a week, 4 times a week. Sometimes these stories just get lost in the crack. And, you know, last week, for instance, I wrote a column about a couple of Yankee Stadium chairs my father didn't buy.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I somehow cobbled a column together out of that. And not only was the response overwhelming, but people not only, you know, responded to that, but they also sent pictures of their own chairs.
Yeah, I saw that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, to the point where I actually wrote a follow-up column. I don't do that a lot, but I mean, it was so overwhelming that I felt that I owed it to people who were willing to share these stories. So I don't know if it's the nature of the stories or if it's the fact that we all have time on our hands, or if it's, and I think that this might be a case that people just tend to take an extra 5 seconds of kindness now that they might not have before. I like to think that anyway. And I think so I think all of that, you know, all of that goes to together. And, you know, you asked about Brian's song. I mean, it really does hold up. And what I found, you know, interesting about putting the column together, Chris, is that, and it really is just a fluke. I mean, you know, I'm kind of a history junkie, and so I have access to a lot of newspaper archives. I literally just stumbled upon this late Saturday night and thought, you know what? Wow, it just so happens that this is an anniversary, and you know, so it gets to the point. I know what you know what I mean here. I couldn't not write this column once I saw it.
Yeah.
But what amazed me is that, you know, the speech that I was able to cobble together strictly through the newspaper accounts of the day. It was important to me to do that. I didn't want to rely on the movie, and I didn't want to even rely on the book which I have in my library, I Am Third, which it was based on. I just went by the actual reporters. Account of the speech, and it was word for word what, you know, there's the famous line that he ends with, you know, I love Brian Piccolo, you know, I hope that you would love him too, and when you hit your knees tonight, ask God to love him. I mean, that was Gail Sayer saying that. That wasn't a writer punching it up. And when I typed that yesterday, I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I broke down, because it was so emotional to realize that this was not a Hollywood creation. It was absolutely Gail Sayers' words reflecting Gail Sayers' emotions in the moment. And of course, you know, as we know now, I mean, his friend died, you know, less than 3 weeks later, maybe just over 3 weeks later. And, you know, we know who Brian Piccolo now is because of the movie, but also because of Gail Sayers. You know, if that moment hadn't happened, you know, maybe there's a movie, maybe there's not, but there's certainly not the payoff moment in that movie that people still talk about 50 years later, 49 years later after the movie. And, you know, all the credit in the world to the writers who were at the dinner that day, because they wrote eloquently about it, and it was easy to kind of cobble together what that night was like just by, you know, just by reading their words. And, you know, I've always believed, you know, I've done a lot of history books and have relied on old newspaper accounts a lot. And, you know, I always feel like when I write the columns that I write, in contemporary time, it's almost like I'm paying it forward to somebody who might stumble across something that's going to be helpful for them, you know, in an archive in 20 years. So hopefully that's where the deal is.
Billy Dee Williams killed it, didn't he? I mean, he killed it.
And I guess I saw a story today that apparently that originally was supposed to be Louis Gossett Jr.
Wow.
And you can't imagine that he would have done a terrible job with that, because he's every bit, if not more, the actor that Billy Dee Williams is. But, of course, it's hard to imagine anybody but Billy Dee Williams playing that role, just because you've seen it so many times. But, yes, he did. And, you know, I did watch, you know, because so many people sent me the YouTube of the clip of the speech in the movie, and you just realize just how perfectly he delivered it.
Oh my God.
And it was amazing. And look at me, when you watch that show, I mean, Billy Dee Williams definitely looks like he could be a halfback in the NFL.
Absolutely.
I'm not so sure James Conn didn't look like he's going to be a leg breaker for the Corleones in a couple of months, yeah, which is what he wanted to be. But I mean, he's of course a great actor, and he played the part great. But Billy Dee wasn't just a terrific actor there, but he also believed that he could probably, you know, hold his own.
Yeah, I mean,
it really was amazing.
It really was, and he really, as Bill Murray said in Caddyshack, he crawled inside his pelt and lived a little bit about who this guy. He really became Gail Sayers. So I give him credit for that. And it was great to read that, because I wasn't really aware of the backstory until I read it today. So I wanted to have you on anyway, and before the column came out. But then when I read that and I thought back to watching the movie for the first time, I knew I had what we were going to lead with anyway. So listen, you and I are not good friends. We don't know each other that well, but we have respect for each other. And I know that you think along the same lines I do in some ways. And one of them will be that there must be, and you mentioned one of them, there must be some silver linings that are going to come out of this for all of us. And you talked about being a little kinder and sending in a note when maybe you wouldn't if you were busier in your everyday life, but now you have more time to do the little things. Have you thought about yet some of the some of the silver lining that will come out of what we're going through right now before we get into your thoughts on how we, you know, work out from the sports standpoint all of the logistical nightmares that are ahead of us?
I do. I mean, I really do think that, I mean, we just keep it with sports. I mean, I do think that I can't imagine sports fans are going to take sports for granted anymore. You know, I mean, I don't mean that that's necessarily a bad thing. It's just that, you know, there are times you can roll your eyes. Oh, this game stinks. Why am I watching this? And the idea that in our normal life we have access to so much stuff, so many games, so many athletes, and when you realize then, you know, why we come to those games in the first place, because they really do, you know, serve an essential part of our lives. Not the only part, not the biggest part. But look, sports are important to us. And I think sometimes, I do think sometimes you can take them for granted. You can take for granted how much they mean to you. I think you can take for granted how, you know, just how incredible the athletes who we watch are doing what they do. I think you can take for granted, you know, the kind of emotional tug of war that you let sports, you know, take you on.
And the fabric of your life a little bit. You know, there's always a game tonight. Like, all right, what do you got going on? Yeah. Nothing but the Yanks play at 7. You know, nothing but I'm watching. You know, so it's sort of a safety net for when you don't have family time, when you don't have business commitments, when you don't. It's a place that you know will be there when other things aren't, and now we're without that. So I agree with you from that standpoint. We did take it for granted, and now, you know, we don't have that tonight. There's no game.
You know what it makes me appreciate, Chris? It makes me appreciate all the more a pretty famous letter that Franklin Roosevelt wrote to Judge Landis right after Pearl Harbor, when Landis basically offered to, you know, if the president thought it was in the best interest of the country to shut down baseball, he would do that. And Roosevelt wrote what became to be known as the Green Light Letter, in which case he basically explained that the last thing in the world the country needed was for baseball to shut itself down. In fact, the country might need baseball more now than it ever did, because it allows, workers and factories and whatever, just it allowed a slice of normalcy to go on on the homeland, on the home front, at an impossible time. And, you know, we can make fun of how bad baseball was during the war years, but the fact is that every team played 154 games every year. They crowned a World Series champion every single year. You know, and you couldn't say that about the Premier League in war-torn Europe. You couldn't say that about a lot of the things going on around the world, but baseball managed to maintain itself, maintain its business operation all during the war, and it made a difference. People cared about it. Not to the extreme, obviously, because there were other things to be worried about. You know, and we played the same role after 9/11. It's played the same role after many national calamities, where we're allowed to, you know, turn to the games for an hour a night, for an hour and a half a night, for 2 hours a night, and lose yourself in them. And, you know, I think that's what's made this part, this time for us, just so extraordinary and so difficult, is that there are no escapes. You know, certainly for sports fans. No, theater goers can't go watch a Broadway show to take their mind off their problems, or go to a movie theater, or go see a choir or a band.
Yeah, or a concert. Yeah, absolutely.
Or anything. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like the things that allow us to deal with the hardships of life, whether it's a death, whether it's losing a job, whether it's national, you know, a national emergency. I mean, there are things that are like kind of safety cocoons that we go to. And none of those things are available to us. I mean, they are to a degree. You can watch as many old games as you want. You can treat the Michael Jordan documentary like it's the Dead Sea Scrolls, and that's the kind of the way that we lose ourselves now. But that, you know, like, I mean, I don't want to say that sports is essential in the way that essential things are essential. But you use the word fabric, and it's true. The fabric of our being, you know, is comprised of a lot of things that to us are essential. They aren't necessarily the most important things in our lives, but they are essential in making us who we are. And sports for sports fans is absolutely that.
Yeah, it's a rhythm of your life in the summertime to have baseball at night. I mean, it's the rhythm of your summer. And it has been every year since you were 8 or 9 for most people listening to this radio station right now. I mean, that's just the way it is. And the people that read Mike Vaccaro's columns in the Post, for those people, you know, the rhythm of baseball has been very much a part of their life since 8 or 9 with no interruptions until now, with the exception of a strike or something. And even then, you knew they were coming back and you knew that they would come back whole. Here, we don't even have that. We don't have the, you know, the undervalued anticipation, which I don't think people understand how valuable anticipation in general is, whether it's your next vacation or a promotion or your kid's graduation or whatever it is. Anticipation is very valuable, and we don't even have that now. So it is very difficult times and very strained times for a lot of people.
I think it's the reason why, you know, I think we're probably reluctant. I know I am, probably are, Chris. You don't want to overplay the alleged day-to-day momentum of, well, basketball is now this close to starting.
Yeah, I'm just the opposite. I've been completely, and I told the listeners, my opinion, Mike, is that when they announce something firm, there'll be at least 3 weeks, probably closer mm-hmm. to a month, for mm-hmm. us to go over all the logistics of what they say and whether we think it's a good idea and whether these playoffs of 3 out of 5 instead of 4 out of 7, who it favors, and the home court, and, you know, all of the logistical problems that are going to be discussed. We're going to have 3 weeks to a month to debate that. I don't want to mm-hmm. do it now and get my hopes up and then, you know, change it again and have wasted 2 weeks talking about baseball in Phoenix when, you know, that rumor now is completely gone. 2 weeks ago was what they were talking about.
Right, but you can also understand why it's easy to seize upon those momentum stories because people want it so much.
Oh, absolutely. The thing.
It's important to be like you said, I think it's important to show caution in terms of what's possible, what's safe, what the other logistics are. I think hope is good, but I think that you have to do it in tempered, you have to be measured about it, because otherwise, like you said, you could be setting yourself up for almost a double disappointment, because if we're all at the point now where we think that we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then that light goes off, it's going to make us twice as unhappy and twice as depressed, and that's something we really don't need right now.
Yeah, and it'll make us doubt the next prognostication about when things will start and how they will start and logistically. I hate to be pessimistic, but there's so many logistical problems here. Like I was mentioning earlier about college football and how it so relies on the fan for all the buzz and juice and electricity that is college football. And I just thinking to myself, how the hell are they going to be able to do this? I mean, how can they possibly do this? The clock ticks, the hour, the sand runs to the hourglass. What are your thoughts about how hard it's going to be to actually weave their way into some playing of games in any of these sports?
Very difficult, and that's why, to me, I would rather them, you know, spend all their time now making sure that they're, you know, people kind of laugh at some of the stuff that was in the baseball protocol, 67 pages worth of no spitting and no whatever. But to me, good. I mean, this is the time that you want to make sure that you game it all out. Because, you know, if it's up to a point where you decide to pull the trigger and you come back and all of a sudden you have a raft of problems, that's not going to be at all beneficial for anybody. And so to me, you know, it's of course, safety is paramount. And I understand, you know, that has to be, you know, however it's done, however we reach to a point where we're comfortable, where things are safe, that has to be achieved and it can't be cheated. Because that's paramount. You can't have a league and have, you know, 5 players in the league in the course of a week test positive. You just can't. That's going to cause issues not only for the current day, but also to the belief that we could ever do this again. I mean, it's got to be done properly and smartly. And I think that's the important thing. Look, I mean, the thing with baseball, the issue that none of us wants to talk about is the labor part of it that's going to be discussed at some point, because that's got everything to do with pandemic. That's got everything to do with billionaires and millionaires arguing over money at a time when 40 million people are out of work.
It's greed. Yeah,
and so you know that's almost in its own little box now. Everything else has to be figured out before they even get to that. It's got to get to a point where they could come back, because there's no point in having that bloody discussion until they believe that they're in a position where they could do the season and do it properly, do it safely, do it without fear of any kind of health repercussion.
And then bleeding into the off seasons and trying to figure out how to make sure 2021 is as close to full as they can make it without overly taxing everybody. So, you know, there's just one problem after another. Let me finish with my concern about, and this is at all levels from Little League on up, in every sport, it's just the physical nature of our relationships. You know, like Like, you and I haven't met personally. So if I finally did see you somewhere, like at a press box or whatever, my inclination would be, hey, Mike, it's great to finally meet you. I'd want to give you a hug and say, hey, Mike, it's finally great to, you know, and that's life. Like, that's how the world works. That's how it's always worked. And the older you are, the longer you've lived with that kind of life. And if somebody makes a hole in one, you know, you're going to hug them. You're going to high five them. If somebody hits a game-winning homer, you're going to mob them. And all of that is so... You know, I hate to overuse the word fabric, but it's so ingrained into the games that we play, and it's such a part of being a teammate and the camaraderie of being a teammate. And what players remember when they retire are those kind of celebrations more than the actual physical play itself. What about all that? Have you processed that at all?
Yeah, I have. And I'll tell you a story, Chris. I mean, last week, I fortunately my aunt passed away in Florida. Last month, her family flew her up here. She was going to be buried with my uncle, and you were allowed a small amount of people at the cemetery. We went there. We exited the car. We took part of the ceremony, and as soon as they were done, my cousin came over to me and extended his hand, and I shook it because we're both holding our hands now. Now we both had gloves on, but that's beside the point. And it's like there was a second there where we're like, oh my God, we're shaking each other's hands. Like, and we were hopeful that we weren't going to be taken away by anybody.
Yeah.
But also, but in that moment, also the other equal and opposite reaction, it was so delightful to shake my beloved cousin's hand. That's what we do. We shake hands. We hug.
Sets us apart. I mean, it's the human experience, man.
It's part of what makes life livable, and I personally have hated the fact that that's the one handshake I've had in 2 months. Besides, of course I hug my wife, but that's different. We live together,
right? Your family.
I mean, there's no other contact with anybody else, and it really was. And to me, what that symbolized, Chris, is, I mean, I think we all have this inner war every day. There's the part of us that wants to be the good citizen, wants to do what's right, wants to do what's proper, wants to follow protocols, wants to not be that person who makes other people uncomfortable or puts them in jeopardy. That's the one part of our soul. The other part of our soul is the one that screams out every day, I want my world back. I want my life back. I want the simple things back. I want to be able to live my life left, because who knows how many more innings we all have left, and I want to make the most of them. And, you know, that war battles within my soul every day, and I'm sure it battles within yours and everyone else's. And it doesn't matter what your prevailing political thought is either. I think it's just, you know, it's a constant battle between what you think you need to do and what you want to do. And sometimes it's hard to kind of keep that on the right side of the line.
No doubt. And I just look at it from a sports standpoint and say it's so ingrained in celebrating, in picking a guy up who made a bad play and giving him a hug and saying, it's all right, you know, tomorrow, we got another game tomorrow. I mean, it's just so, such a part of being involved in sports, even fans, right? I mean, I imagine as a kid anyway, you hugged a fan that you didn't know at a game after a game-winning home run, because that's what we do. We high-five each other. We're all, you know, we're up in each other. We're all excited about each other. And it's such a part of the sports world that asking all these kids and teams and NCAA teams and everybody to come back and not be that way anymore when they've been that way their whole life is going to be fascinating to me. I don't know how the hell that's going to work.
It's just simple things. You're talking to Larry Brooks later on. I'm sure you guys are going to talk about the Islanders.
Yep.
And you know, I remember when I was 13 years old, the Islanders beat the Flyers in the overtime. I was playing a Little League game. We're all 13 years old. 13-year-old boys don't necessarily hug each other.
No.
But we're in the dugout. We're trying to play the game. We're listening to the radio. And all of a sudden, Nystrom scores the goal. And it's just like dog pile. Both teams, in this dog pile, like we just won the World Series.
Yeah, and you still remember it, to your point. I mean, that's the point.
It's one of the great memories
exactly.
of my childhood.
Exactly.
And you can't even fathom how that could ever exist in our world again. I mean, hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully that we can. But, I mean, it makes me sad thinking that is such a prominent memory in my life, and I don't know that it could ever happen for someone else going forward.
Yeah, and even watching all these videos, right, of all the great games in the past,
yeah.
you notice because we can't do it, all the contact
between players that isn't involved in the game. It's on the bench. It's a coach coming over to a player. It's somebody consoling somebody else. It's just, you know, sweat being exchanged with sweat, and nobody ever thought about it before. I don't know how, you know, how we break that habit, or how everybody comes back and deals with that. So
yeah, the Packers can't carry Lombardi up the field, and the Dolphins can't carry Don Shula off the field. And I mean, all these forever images, you know. It's just
guy hits a game winning three at the buzzer and nobody comes near him. I mean,
can you imagine?
No,
exactly. What happens if Leonard makes a shot this year? As far as the last
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know,
you're supposed to think in the moment to lay back.
Right.
Oh my God,
it's a whole different world.
Michael, good conversation as always. You never let me down. I wish we had more time, but I do appreciate it. We will talk to Larry later, and hopefully the next time we talk, we'll have some firm plans about games, and we can get back to that. And again, congratulations on the column today. I think people really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Chris. It's really great to talk to you again.
There you go. Mike Vaccaro of The Post, and always good to talk to Mike, obviously, and we have great mutual respect, and I just love the way he writes. And today was really good because I wasn't aware of how Gale Sayers approached the Brian Piccolo story and how the media was able to understand the transition from the Gale Sayers they knew to the Gale Sayers that ended up, you know, making the tribute type speech to Brian Piccolo and giving the award to Brian Piccolo. It was, it's as heavy, and yet, I don't know. It makes you feel good, but it's a very heavy, sad movie.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.